Live from the historic parsonage of 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's Iron Sharpens Iron, a radio platform on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27, verse 17 tells us, "Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Matthew Henry said that in this passage, quote, "We are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with, and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better." It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. Now here's our host, Chris Arnson.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, and the rest of humanity living on the planet Earth who are listening via live streaming. This is Chris Arnson, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron, wishing you all a happy Friday on this 25th day of November 2016, the day after Thanksgiving, and I am hoping that all of you who are listening had a blessed time of not only eating delicious food, but more importantly, fellowshipping with those you love, giving thanks to God for all of the blessings that He has bestowed upon you. And I'm sure you would, if you were going to be honest with yourself, that those blessings would be more than you could possibly number or even remember. So I hope that that was indeed a blessed time for you, and perhaps it's still going on. Perhaps you still have relatives lingering around your house. Maybe you're actually now praying that they leave. but I hope that wherever you are and whoever your loved ones are, that they arrive safely home when they journey or when you journey from wherever you may be. Today, we are having a guest return to this program, but this is actually the very first time he's being interviewed on this program, and that may seem like an oxymoron to you, but the first time we had Dr. Joshua Guthman on our program, we had technical difficulties that demanded that we cut the program short, unfortunately. But now that those technical issues have been rectified, we are, God willing, going to be having a full two-hour interview with Dr. Joshua Guthman. Now, this interview is a bit out of my wheelhouse, as those of you who listen to Iron Sharpens Iron know. I most often have as my guests people who are in theological agreement with me, or who are at least share my Christian faith. But today we have a Jewish guest on Iron Sharpens Iron, because I found his love for a particular type of Christian music quite fascinating, especially since he has been captivated so much by this music that he has written a book titled Strangers Below, Primitive Baptists and American Culture. And today we are discussing how a Jewish history professor from L.A. was captivated by the a cappella worship of primitive Baptists. And it's my honor and privilege to welcome you to Iron Sharpens Iron, Dr. Joshua Guthman.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me back a second time. I feel really optimistic that this is going to go perfectly well, and I'm just really grateful that I get to come back.
And by the way, I forgot to ask you before we went on the air, but is it Guthman or Guthman?
No, Guthman. You got it right, Guthman. Just phonetically.
And you are Associate Professor of History at Berea College in Berea, Kentucky. Why don't you tell our listeners something about Berea College?
Oh, Berea College is an amazing place. It's a special place. It was founded as a interracial co-educational college in slaveholding-era Kentucky in 1855. And it remains dedicated to that heritage of equality, and an ethic of Christian and impartial love. It is only for students who are poor. So you need to, it's a tuition-free college. So you need to economically qualify. Hmm. And so our mission here is to serve excellent students, but students who are in need. from the greater Appalachia region. So we have about 80% of our students from what we call greater Appalachia, 10% from elsewhere in the U.S., and then 10% students come from places abroad.
Now, what is your particular upbringing, the roots of your family? I know that you're Jewish, but were you raised in an Orthodox Jewish home, or was it a conservative?
No, I was raised in a conservative Jewish home, so that's like if you have three, if you think about Judaism having sort of three major denominations, I'm fudging things a little bit. There are really more than three, but if you think about, let's just think about the three main ones, Orthodox being, let's say, the most strict, most strictly observant, Reform being the more liberal, and then conservative would be sort of in the middle. And that's my tradition.
Now, how did someone of that background wind up at a college, Berea College, that identifies itself as Christian?
It's such a roundabout. It is such a roundabout path. But you know, my parents asked me that exact same question, Chris. What happens is, you know, Berea takes all comers. Okay, so there is no Berea. The college understands itself as Christian. Oh, it's a very open, liberal understanding of Christianity, but there is no sort of faith test or anything to be a faculty member here. It's the college is a Christian identity, but it's not a Bible college. And then I wound up here because my scholarship and my interests, you know, really brought me here. The stuff that I was working on primitive Baptists, on Southern evangelicalism, or something that found a home here. And it was just a great match. So here I am in small town Kentucky, and I'm loving life.
Oh, that's good. And I have to remind our listeners that your host, Chris Arnzen, has not fallen away from his strict conservative Calvinistic ideology. I am not a modern ecumenist or anything like that, but I do find this story fascinating. I sometimes do like to have interviews with people who are on the outside of my background, outside of Christianity, who are looking in to get an idea of how they are viewing what they are seeing. I have done this with other representatives of other groups before. And I'm looking forward to this interview. One of the things I wanted to start with right away, before we even go into a discussion of Strangers Below, Primitive Baptists in American Culture, which is the title of your book, and also before we go into a verbal description of this music and how you discovered it and what it has come to mean to you, I wanted to play a little bit of this music first, so our audience has an idea of what I'm talking about. This first song happens to be one of my favorite songs that I have ever heard sung by Primitive Baptists. The Cades Cove Primitive Baptist Church actually is the group that is singing this song. And Oh Jesus, My Savior is the title of the hymn. And this is the kind of music that I happen to absolutely love. I fell in love with it the first time I heard it. There are people who absolutely hate it. There are people who are just indifferent about it. But I just love it. I can't imagine how people can disagree with me on this. I think it's beautiful music. In fact, even our Jewish guest obviously does, which drew him into studying Primitive Baptists in a deeper way. And also, I want to make a disclaimer about Primitive Baptists as well. I happen to be a Calvinist Baptist, theologically Reformed Baptist, but I do have some very serious disagreements theologically with the Primitive Baptists, and I also have to be clear that I am not attempting to broad-brush Primitive Baptists either and create a monolith out of them. There are different theological perspectives even within the Primitive Baptist movement. And so I just want to make sure that I made that clear, that I understand that, because at times it may sound like I am broad brushing when I describe them, or even when my guest perhaps is describing them. But here is Elder Walter Evans and his version, or his congregation's version, of Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah. I hope that you enjoy this. and may the Lord bless you with it. Well, I don't know what you thought of that, but I think that that is absolutely beautiful music. And tell us about when you, Dr. Guthman, when you first heard this music. Tell us how that came about and what was it about the music that drew you to it?
Well, what happened, it was strange and the kind of accident, but a beautiful accident for me. I was a graduate student. I was working in folklife archives during the summer to pay my bills, and I was doing rather boring data entry work, but the perk, or the key perk for somebody like me who's so interested in all different types of American roots music was that I could listen to anything in the collection, and the collection is vast, it's enormous, it's one of the it's really maybe probably the preeminent collection of American folk music that we have. This is the Southern Folklife Collection at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And I would do my data entry, and I'd play, you know, I'd take something off the shelf, an LP or a cassette or field recordings, whatever. So one day I saw a cassette on the shelf, and the spine of it said Primitive Baptist, and I didn't know what that was, who those people were at all. I was simply intrigued by the name. I put the tape on because why not? And what I heard just struck me dead. I'd never heard anything like it in my life. It was very much like what we just heard, people singing loudly, very slowly, often in minor keys. They were singing, they didn't really have conventional harmonies. The voices would kind of go in and out of phase. They were together, but not quite. It sounded like great crashing waves of sound. It sounded mysterious to me. It sounded luminous. It sounded funereal. It reminded me of a kind of singing I'd heard in synagogue growing up. To me, it was arresting. So I just could not stop listening. And after that, I just wanted to know more. Who were these people? Why did they sing that way? Tell me more, you know? And so I just kept reading and listening.
Yeah, I have nicknamed this music Appalachian Gregorian chant. I don't know if any.
That is absolutely apt. Absolutely, yes. There's something. The sort of the sacred air of it just kind of it just seems to you know come off of the music, and there it has a kind of reverberation, sort of that quality to it, like Gregorian chant, even though, you know, theologically it's quite different.
Yes. In fact, I'm going to play another song right now by the Cades Cove Primitive Baptist Church. It's not the one that I was trying to play in the beginning. Maybe I'll be able to play that one a little later, because that is one of my favorites, if not my favorite song. But this is "Oh, Tell Me No More." It's subtitled as "Sweet Harmony." "Oh, Tell Me No More" by the Cades Cove Primitive Baptist Church. I hope you enjoy this as well.
Yeah.
Well, that was Tell Me No More by Cades Cove Primitive Baptist Church, another one of my favorite songs by the Primitive Baptists. And I'm going to read the description of the book that Jonathan Guthman has written, or Guthman, I'm sorry, has written, published by the University of North Carolina Press. I'm going to read the publisher's description. Before the Bible Belt fastened itself across the South, competing factions of evangelicals fought over their faith's future, and a contrarian sect, self-named the Primitive Baptists, made its stand. Joshua Guthman here tells the story of how a band of anti-missionary and anti-revivalistic Baptists defended Calvinism, America's oldest Protestant creed, from what they feared were the unbridled forces of evangelical greed and power. In their harrowing confessions of faith and in the quavering uncertainty of their singing, Guthman finds the emotional catalyst of the Primitives' early 19th century movement, a searing experience of doubt that motivated believers rather than paralyzed them. But Primitives' old orthodoxies proved startlingly flexible. After the Civil War, African-American primitives elevated a renewed Calvinism, coursing with freedom's energies. Tracing the faith into the 20th century, Guthman demonstrates how a primitive Baptist spirit, unmoored from its original theological underpinnings, seeped into the music of renowned Southern artists such as Roscoe Holcomb and Ralph Stanley, whose high, lonesome sound appealed to popular audiences searching for meaning in the drift of post-war American life. In an account that weaves together religious, emotional, and musical histories, Strangers Below demonstrates the unlikely but enduring influence of primitive Baptists on American religious and cultural life. And that is the description of the book that we are discussing, Strangers Below, Primitive Baptists and American Culture. And so, Dr. Guthman, from falling in love with this music as you initially did, how did that eventually lead to you writing a book about a denomination that identifies itself as Christian, and yet you are self-admittedly a Jewish historian?
Yeah. So what happened was, I could sort of pick up where I left off, where I was fascinated by this music. And I wanted to know who was making these sounds and why they were singing that way. And I listened a lot, and then I researched. And what I found out about the primitives was fascinating. Are you there, Chris?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So what I found, my search took me to the early 19th century and a fight between Baptists and then really a fight between this group called the Primitive Baptists and evangelical culture more widely. And the Primitive Baptists emerged in the early 19th century as opponents of missionary societies, Bible tract societies, theological seminaries, and revivals. And this was so strange to me, so odd, so unexpected. This was unlike any kind of evangelical church in the South that I'd ever heard of. And I wanted to know more about them again. So I kept learning more and more, and they just fascinated me. So the music fascinated me, their early history fascinated me, and on it went. And, you know, eventually you find yourself writing a whole book.
And by the way, I'm going to give our email address out now if anybody would like to join us on the air. Our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. I also want to give a little summary of what the distinctives would be from what I, as a Reformed Baptist, also a thoroughgoing five-point Calvinist, but unlike the Primitive Baptists, the historically Reformed denominations, going even back to John Calvin himself, many of the Presbyterian, Dutch Reformed, and Reformed Baptists, which were known by different names in centuries past, such as Particular Baptists and so on, they strongly, although believing that God is the author and finisher of our faith as Christians, God is sovereign and in control over all things, but he uses means, and he uses evangelism and the preaching of the gospel as his means by which he regenerates dead sinners, sinners who are spiritually dead, lifeless individuals, whereas the primitive Baptists do not believe that God uses means to awaken lost souls. God does this, according to primitive Baptists, completely apart from evangelism, apart from preaching, and apart from handing out tracts and so on. And they believe that those things comfort the sheep. They instill truth in the minds and hearts of those who God chooses to give new birth, but they are not instruments that bring about new birth. Would that be a fairly correct summary according to your understanding, Dr. Guthman?
That is absolutely spot on. Absolutely spot on. And I think it's important to note how different the primitive Baptist theology is from so many other evangelical groups, you know, from other Baptists, but within the Reformed tradition, they're sort of out. They're not quite. I don't know if I'd say they're out in their own island, but they're different.
Yes, and they would receive the nickname from many Calvinists, hyper Calvinists. They would call the many within the primitive Baptist movement, and not even exclusively primitive Baptists, but those of other denominations like the Netherlands Reformed and some others. They have been called hyper-Calvinistic. But again, I have to revert back to my caveat at the beginning that primitive Baptists are not a monolith. Some have broken away from that strict idea that God does not use means and have become very evangelistic. There are, in fact, my friend Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries, who's a Reformed Baptist, was invited to speak at a progressive primitive Baptist church, and they were nearly identical in their theology and so on to Dr. White, if not completely identical. But we are going to go to a station break now. If you would like to join us, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And we ask of you to please give us your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. And this is the song I'm going to now that I mentioned in the beginning of the program.
Yeah.
That was Cades Cove Primitive Baptist Church, Oh Jesus My Savior, and we'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors, so don't go away.
I'm Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, and here's one of my favorite guests, Todd Friel, to tell you about a conference he and I are going to.
Hello, this is Todd Friel, host of Wretched Radio and Wretched TV, and occasional guest on Chris's show.
Iron. Criticizing Iron.
I think that's what it's called. Hoping that you can join Chris and me at the G3 conference in Atlanta, my new hometown. It is going to be a bang-up conference called the G3 Conference, celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation with Paul Washer, Steve Lawson, D.A. Carson, Vody Baucom, Conrad and Bayway, Phil Johnson, James White, and a bunch of other people. We hope to see you there. Learn more at g3conference.com, g3conference.com.
Thanks, Todd, I think. See you at the Iron Sharpens Iron exhibitors booth.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Hi, I'm Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, here to tell you about an exciting offer from World Magazine, my trusted source for news from a Christian perspective. Try World at no charge for 90 days and get a free copy of R.C. Sproul's book, Relationship Between Church and State. I rely on World because I trust the reporting. I gain insight from the analysis, and World provides clarity to the news stories that really matter. I believe you'll also find World to be an invaluable resource to better understand critical topics with a depth that's simply not found in other media outlets. Armed with this coverage, World can help you to be a voice of wisdom in your family and your community. This trial includes bi-weekly issues of World Magazine, on-scene reporting from World Radio, and the fully shareable content of World Digital. Simply visit wmg.org/ironsharpens to get your world trial and Dr. Sproul's book all free. No obligation with no credit card required. Visit World News Group at wng.org/ironsharpens today.
Thrivent Financial is not your typical financial services provider. As a membership organization, we help Christians be wise with money and live generously every day. And for the fourth year in a row, we were named one of the world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute, a leading international think tank dedicated to the creation, advancement, and sharing of best practices in business ethics. Contact me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433 to learn more about the Thrivent Difference.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Blending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Welcome back. If you just tuned us in, our guest today for the full 2 hours is Joshua Guthman, and he is Associate Professor of History at Berea College in Berea, Kentucky. We are discussing his book, Strangers Below, Primitive Baptists in American Culture, and we're also discussing the hauntingly beautiful music of the Primitive Baptists that I have nicknamed Appalachian Gregorian chant. I don't know if anybody else has ever called it that. Have you ever heard anybody describe it that way before me?
No, but I love it. I think it's perfect.
And if you'd like to join us on the air, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And we do have quite a number of listeners who have written questions for our guest today. And I'm looking forward to getting Dr. Guthman's responses to these questions. But if you'd like to join us with your own question, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please give us at least your first name, city and state, and country of residence if you live outside of the USA. First, we have Susan in Massapequa Park, Long Island, New York. The Primitive Baptist worship is unadorned and centers around a cappella singing. Has this approach to the worship of God been used by other denominations?
The quick answer is yes. The one that comes to mind immediately to me in the American context, at least, is the Churches of Christ, and they split off from the Disciples of Christ or Christians.
Yes.
by the early 20th century, and a key issue animating that split was the use of musical instruments in church during worship, and folks belonging to the Church of Christ said no instruments. They said they couldn't find any sort of explicit scriptural warrant for that kind of a thing. Whereas Christian churches or Disciples of Christ, were more, I would say, more flexible, or because they could not find anything scripturally that had an explicit prohibition on the use of instruments in church worship, then it was an issue that they could, weigh, an issue they can consider. So that's the Church of Christ issue is the one that comes immediately to mind to me.
Yeah, that would be from what is known as the Restorationist movement of the 19th century, led by Alexander Campbell, and some other figures are known to be a part of that movement. And the three branches that you have today are the Church of Christ a cappella. You have the Churches of Christ and Christian Churches, which is a conservative group that uses music. And then you have the Disciples of Christ denomination, which is has become, for the most part, a very liberal denomination and would have very little in common now with the other two groups that are conservative. But I can tell you that there are a number of Reformed denominations that exclusively sing a cappella, but they are typically also exclusive psalm singers who do not read out of, or not, do not sing out of a hymnal during a worship service. They might, during a time of fellowship, an informal gathering of some kind, sing hymns, but during their worship services, they exclusively sing psalms, and that would be the Reformed Presbyterian Church of North America denomination, also known as the Covenanters. You have another Reformed Presbyterian denomination that is connected with them, that is a global denomination, and you have some other Reformed groups that are believe in exclusive psalmody and yet also believe in exclusive a cappella singing. There's also a Reformed Baptist church in Rochester, New York, that is pastored by John Price, who believes in exclusive a cappella singing, and he is a hymn singer as well as a psalm singer. He does not have an exclusive psalm singing congregation. And John Price has written a really fascinating book with compelling argumentation called Old Light on New Worship. That's Old Light on New Worship, and it's a defense of exclusive a cappella singing in Christian worship. And he is not a Primitive Baptist. He is a Reformed Baptist, a Calvinist, but not a Primitive Baptist. So, and there, I'm sure I'm missing some others, but thank you, Susan in Massapequa Park, Long Island, and you are getting a free copy of the book by our guest today, Dr. Joshua Guthman, and we need your full mailing address to get that out to you, and thank you for contributing your question to the program. We also have CJ in Lindenhurst, Long Island, New York, who says that I know that Orthodox Jewish synagogues are exclusively a cappella in their worship. Was that a factor in the Primitive Baptist worship songs that drew you to investigate this group in further depth? Dr. Guthman?
Well, I guess the short answer is no, because I'm not, you know, I'm not an Orthodox Jew, but I did say earlier, and it's true, that in the music, it just, it reminded me of certain sort of twisting cantorial lines I'd hear sung in synagogue. And so in the synagogues that I grew up in, they would have a song leader called a cantor. And there would be congregational singing too, but the cantor would often take his turn at the front leading, and sometimes he would sing solo, and it's very elaborate singing with lots of twists and turns and slides and ornaments, and often in minor keys. And there's some kind of connection that I heard in some of the Primitive Baptist singing to that kind of music that I'd heard growing up. But that is that's an emotional connection. You know, I don't think that that's personal to me. I think we'd be really stretching things to find a kind of deep historical connection there. But the emotional pull, at least for me, was undeniable.
Yeah. You know, and going back to, Pastor John Price's book that I mentioned, Old Light on New Worship, one of the strongest elements of argumentation in his book is regarding history. And in his book, he actually traces a cappella worship in Christianity all the way back to the synagogue, the Jewish synagogue of the first century, after the destruction of the temple in AD 70, when the Jews stopped using musical instruments because they were tied in with the sacrificial system.
Yeah.
And Pastor John Price really opened my eyes about some startling historical facts. According to his research, the very first Presbyterian church in the United States that used an organ was not until the 19th century. And I was shocked by that. And historically, all of the Protestant groups were in harmony in using exclusive a cappella music, except for the Lutherans. The Lutherans agreed with the Catholics, which actually the Catholics originally didn't use musical instruments either, where that's why you get the Gregorian chant. But in later in history, they used the instruments in the Lutheran Church, apparently, forbid using them. But I just thought that was a fascinating bit of church history. And CJ, you're also getting a free copy of the book Strangers Below by our guest, Dr. Joshua Guthman. And if you could, before I go on to any more of the questions from our listeners, how did you come up with that title, Strangers Below?
Oh, man, wow. It comes from a hymn. It comes from a hymn that doesn't really have a title, but the opening lines, you sort of just cheat, I guess, you know, and you just take the opening line, the opening lines of the hymn and give the hymn a name. This hymn, I am a stranger here below, and what I am 'tis hard to know. And that couplet seemed to just sum up so much of what I was reading when I was studying Primitive Baptists, their letters and their diaries and their other writings in the 19th century, that they felt in some ways alien to the world. They were always struggling, and they would sense God's grace, and then they would feel that it might have been removed from them, or that they were fooled at first. They had fooled themselves. There's a constant kind of questioning, a constant internal watching that I found in the historical records. And so that line, those two lines, just seemed to sum them up for me. And that's where I got the title of the book.
And we do have Harrison in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, who writes, "From my own investigation of the Primitive Baptists, they appear to be a very tiny sect isolated primarily in very rural areas in the Deep South, with some exceptions. Does your guest know if there is a resurgence of growth among them, or are they dwindling in number to the point of near extinction?"
I know of no resurgence whatsoever. They're small. They were always numerically small, but even in parts of the early 19th century, in the early 19th century, in some parts of the South, they in pockets of North Carolina and Georgia and Florida and Kentucky, in regions of those states, they held their own, and numerically they were fine, and in some places quite strong. And you can read, testimony from missionary Baptists, for instance, early mid-19th century missionary Baptist testimony, where they are panicked that Primitive Baptists essentially hold sway in, let's say, Tennessee, and that the cause of missions is going down the drain. They're very worried. But ultimately, of course, we know the story, and missionary Baptists and their allies and other evangelical denominations, carry the day. And the Primitive Baptist numbers, at last I checked, maybe around 70,000 Primitive Baptists in the U.S. And I don't know, I'm a historian. I don't know what the future holds. I certainly hope they don't die out. That would seem tragic to me. But they are small. I wouldn't say they're isolated, though. Primitive Baptists, they're just parts of, communities like anybody else. And so you'll find them wherever, and they might be your mechanic. They could be your attorney, anything like that. So I wouldn't say they're isolated, but they definitely are small.
And the progressive Primitive Baptists eventually began incorporating musical instruments in their worship services.
Absolutely. And there's even a very tiny subgroup of Primitive Baptists called Primitive Baptist Universalists, who believe in universal salvation. That's totally extraordinary. And there are, of course, we haven't even spoke about Black Primitive Baptists and the different kind of theological trajectories that the Black Primitive Baptist Church and churches took after the Civil War.
Well, tell us about that.
So what happens is, you know, white and Black Primitive Baptists worshipped in the same churches before the war, because Black Primitive Baptists were slaves, so they were held captive. After the war, Black Primitive Baptists, like Black Christians, eventually go their own way. They found their own churches, and the same thing happens with Primitive Baptists. And part of the book, I look closely at a group of Black Primitive Baptists in Alabama and Florida, who eventually form the National Primitive Baptist Convention, which now is, they count themselves, the numbers for them are hard to pin down, but anywhere from really 600,000 to 2 million, so quite large. And in the last part of the 19th century and early 20th century, they're pretty theologically conservative, even though they're innovating on the kind of structural or organizational level. They're having conventions and things like that. But as the 20th century wears on, they become, they look sort of, I would say, more and more like their fellow Baptists. That's how I would put it.
You know, what you said, something that you said just struck me as being very ironic, how the Civil War brought about segregation in a previously integrated church when it comes to the Primitive Baptists.
Yeah, it's always sort of, it's strange, you know. But the thing to keep in mind, of course, is that, you know, those integrated churches were, you know, they were strangely integrated, because the Black worshipers were there because they were compelled to be there, and they were, you know, they were catechized by white ministers who would tell them things that, you know, it was good that they were slaves.
Okay.
You know, and so when they had a chance, of course, to be free from that, they, I think, quite understandably just said, you know, enough.
Right.
I don't want to worship with these people who had enslaved me. That process of separation doesn't happen immediately. And it's very fascinating. There are white and Black Primitive Baptists, but also white, you know, that are worshiping with each other in churches for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. It's a slow separation. You know, I think, like, there's room in there to think about, to imagine that there could be not only serious, deep, painful scarring, okay, but that there might have been also moments of deep fellowship there too between Black and white Primitive Baptists. Just something to keep in mind.
And Harrison, you are also receiving a free copy of the book that we are discussing by Dr. Joshua Guthman, Strangers Below. So please make sure you get us your full mailing address so we can have that shipped out to you. And that's Strangers Below, Primitive Baptists and American Culture. We have Pastor Jason Wallace. I usually don't give out our listeners' full names, but since this is a pastor, Pastor Jason Wallace, I'm sure, isn't going to mind that I give his full name. And he is the pastor of Christ Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Magna, Utah. And he says, both sides of my family were historically Primitive Baptists. What does Dr. Guthman think of shape note singing for encouraging more congregational participation?
Oh, man. Well, I think the record is really clear on this, that shape note singing absolutely encourages participation. And that's why those shape notes came into being, because it became so simple for people to read notes and to participate. And to the point where now, right, you have so many people sort of participate in shape note singing or Sacred Harp singing almost as a pastime. irrespective of their religious commitments. But historically speaking, shape note singing was just a way to teach harmonies to the great mass of Christians who couldn't read musical notation. And it worked. It worked amazingly well. The primitives resisted that kind of movement for a long time, but shape notes slowly but steadily made their way into primitive Baptist singing, and you can find it's plenty of primitive Baptist churches who use shape note singing now.
Well, the thing that's interesting is when we had a questioner earlier, I believe it was Susan in Massapequa Park, New York, who was asking about different denominations using a cappella singing. I have heard a lot of different a cappella singing amongst Christian denominations, but there is something very unusual to me about Primitive Baptists' style of it. It seems to be very unique. Am I right on that?
Well, there's a couple things I'd say is there's the older style, which we heard you play to this lined out style, and there's more to say about that. And then there's the Cave Cove style too. They often use pentatonic scales, and there's a way in which the pentatonic scales don't quite, I don't know how I put this, they don't as easily lend themselves to conflict and resolution the way that minor and major, or diatonic scales do, so like seven-note ones. And what musicologists will say is that in the pentatonic scale, there's less of that. There's a kind of inborn ambiguity in the sound. And that's something that you might be hearing. It's something that I hear. And that might account for at least some of the difference that we hear, that we feel when we listen to different types of primitive Baptist singing.
We're going to our next station break right now. If you'd like to join us on the air with a question of your own, our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com, chrisarnson@gmail.com. And please give us at least your first name, your city and state of residence, and your country of residence if you live outside of the USA. And by the way, Pastor Jason Wallace, you have won our last copy that the University of North Carolina Press has given us to give away of Strangers Below, Primitive Baptists and American Culture. So, Pastor Jason, if you could give us your full mailing address so we can have that shipped out to you. And by the way, that will be shipped out to you by our friends at Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, one of our sponsors, cvbbs.com, CV for Cumberland Valley, BBS for BibleBookService.com. So look for a package with the label cvbbs.com on it. And we thank Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service for shipping out all of the winners in our audience. Their free Bibles, books, CDs, DVDs, and anything else they win when they submit questions to us for our guests. Every time you win something from Iron Sharpens Iron, it's cvbbs.com that ships those things out to you. So we thank them for their faithful support. But we will be right back after these messages. So please do not go away. We have more to say with Dr. Joshua Guthman. And I'm looking forward to our continued conversation, so don't go away.
Chris Arnson here, and I can't wait to head down to Atlanta, Georgia. And here's my friend Dr. James White to tell you why.
Hi, I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. I hope you join me at the G3 Conference, hosted by Pastor Josh Bice and Praise Mill Baptist Church, at the Georgia International Convention Center in Atlanta, January 19th through the 21st, in celebration of the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. I'll be joined by Paul Washer, Steve Lawson, D.A. Carson, Vodi Balcom, Conrad Mbewe, Phil Johnson, Rosaria Butterfield, Todd Friel, and a host of other speakers who are dedicated to the pillars of what G3 stands for, Gospel, Grace, and Glory. For more details, go to g3conference.com. That's g3conference.com.
Thanks, James. Make sure you greet me at the Iron Sharpens Iron exhibit booth while you're there.
Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." Hi, I'm Mark Lukens, pastor of Providence Baptist Church. We are a Reformed Baptist church, and we hold to the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. We are in Norfolk, Massachusetts. We strive to reflect Paul's mindset to be much more concerned with how God views what we say and what we do than how men view these things. That's not the best recipe for popularity, but since that wasn't the apostles' priority, it must not be ours either. We believe, by God's grace, that we are called to demonstrate love and compassion to our fellow man, and to be vessels of Christ's mercy to a lost and hurting community around us, and to build up the body of Christ in truth and love. If you live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or plan to visit our area, please come and join us for worship and fellowship. You can call us at 508-528-5750, that's 508-528-5750, or go to our website to email us, listen to past sermons, worship songs, or watch our TV program entitled Resting in Grace. You can find us at Providence Baptist Church, ma.org, that's Providence Baptist Church, ma.org, or even on sermonaudio.com. Providence Baptist Church is delighted to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Iron Sharpens Iron welcomes Solid Rock Remodeling to our family of sponsors. Serving South Central Pennsylvania, Solid Rock Remodeling is focused on discovering, understanding, and exceeding your expectations. They deliver personalized project solutions with exceptional results. Solid Rock Remodeling offers a full range of home renovations, including kitchen and bath remodeling, decks, porches, windows and doors, roof and siding, and more. For a clear, detailed professional estimate, call this trustworthy team of problem solvers who provide superior results that stand the test of time. Call Solid Rock Remodeling at 717-697-1981, 717-697-1981, or visit solidrockremodeling.com. That's solidrockremodeling.com. Solid Rock Remodeling, bringing new life to your home.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island, is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ
in fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Waldeman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402, or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen. If you just tuned us in, our guest today for the full 2 hours with 1 hour to go is Dr. Joshua Guthman, Associate Professor of History at Berea College in Berea, Kentucky, and the author of the book we're discussing, Strangers Below, Primitive Baptists and American Culture. And if you'd like to join us on the air, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please give us your first name, city and state, and country of residence if you live outside the USA. And our theme today is how a Jewish history professor from L.A. was captivated by the a cappella worship of primitive Baptists. And I am going to play another song. And this song is an interesting song because, according to our guest, Dr. Guthman, it has some kind of primitive Baptist influence or roots. But this would not be categorized as a hymn or a worship song. I think this would be more of a folk song, perhaps, where we have the Ralph Stanley version of it. That was made very popular in the movie O Brother, Where Art Thou? And it is really Although it's not a worship song, because the person singing is singing to the angel of death, because he realizes he's dying and he is not ready for heaven. He knows he'll go to hell and he's in a panic about it. He's terrified. And rather than singing to God for rescue, he's singing to the angel of death to just back off for a while and give him a little bit more time. But I'm going to play that for you, and I'm sure many of you will remember this from the movie O Brother, Where Art Thou? But this is Ralph Stanley's version of O Death.
Oh, death. Oh, death. Won't you spare me over till another year? Well, what is this that I can't see with ice cold hands taking hold of me? Well, I am death, none can excel. I'll open the door to heaven or hell. Oh, death, someone would pray, could you wait to call me another day? The children prayed, the preacher preached, time and mercy is out of your reach. I'll fix your feet till you can't walk. I'll lock your jaw till you can't talk. I'll close your eyes so you can't see this very hour come and go with me. Death, I come to take the soul. Leave the body and leave it cold. To drop the flesh off of the frame. The earth and worm both have a claim. Oh, death. Oh, death. Won't you spare me over till another year? My mother came to my bed, placed a cold towel upon my head. My head is warm, my feet are cold, death is a-moving upon my soul. Oh, death, how you treating me? You close my eyes so I can't see. Well, you're hurting my body. You make me cold. You run my life right out of my soul. Oh, death, please consider my age. Please don't take me at this stage. My wealth is all at your command. If you will move your icy hands. Oh, the young, the rich or poor, all like me, you know. No wealth, no land, no silver, no gold. Nothing satisfies me but your soul. Oh, death. Oh, death. Won't you spare me over till another year? Won't you spare me over till another year? Won't you spare me over till another year?
And in fact, Ralph Stanley sang that at the Grammy Awards not long ago, didn't he, Dr. Guthman?
Yeah, in 2000, it was 2001. What an amazing, it was an amazing turn of events. I remember hearing that song on country music radio back in the day, and I it scrambled my mind. It did not compute, you know, and it didn't compute in the most amazing and lovely way, and it got me, it just got me thinking, like, what, why were people so fascinated with Ralph Stanley singing after that movie? And of course, it was the soundtrack that did gangbuster sales, not the movie itself.
Right.
And Stanley and that song were so much of a part of it, and it got me thinking, why again, and what is it about that singing that seemed to appeal to people?
And unfortunately, in the movie, it's a Ku Klux Klan's Grand Dragon singing the song.
It's so frustrating. I know. It is so frustrating. You know, it's Ralph Stanley is not a Klan member at all, and the movie plays a bunch of things for laughs, and yeah. But I was such a big Ralph Stanley fan at the time, and I'm a Coen Brothers fan too. But I remember seeing when I watched the movie, I thought, oh no, why do you have to put him behind a Klan mask? The vast majority of people who heard that song heard it without images. They didn't hear it with they just heard the song. They didn't see the movie.
So, right, and it's a very odd choice too, because you wouldn't expect a Klansman during a cross burning ceremony to be singing that anyway.
No, I think what it was, it's the sound of his voice. It's just haunting.
Yes.
And people say it over and over again. It's haunting. And I just wanted to know, well, yeah, fine, it is haunting. Well, let's try to figure out something a little bit, to say something a little bit more than just haunting. Where does it come from? And it turns out that he grew up in Primitive Baptist churches, and the sound of his voice right there is a Primitive Baptist sound.
Now, do you know the origins of the song itself? Because I've heard other versions of it that are more explicitly Christian, where the name of Jesus Christ is brought up and so on.
Oh, so I've heard the song, I've heard a bunch of versions just in black and white tradition. I do not know the origins of it. You know, I like that if it's written by somebody or something like that. You know, it's one of those things that songs has been passed back and forth in white and black American traditions, the way that so many things are, and it's been sung in lots of different ways, in ways that don't sound exactly like what we just heard. That's a very specific rendition, but I do not know, you know, the date of origin, for instance.
We have Aaron in Indianapolis, Indiana, who asks, I'm not a student of Hebrew music, other than use of beautiful minor intervals, but are there echoes of Jewish types of singing in the Primitive Baptist music?
So, you know, this is here's something to say about this. This is about me and my, I think, emotional connection. It's hard for, I don't know. In fact, I don't know enough about Jewish liturgical worship music to say much outside of my own experience. But there is this, on the most sacred day of the Jewish calendar, it's called Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and there is a portion of the service where the cantor, the song leader, sings something, a song called, it's a prayer called Hineni. It means I am here or here I am. These are the words that Abraham speaks to God when he binds Isaac to the altar. They are, you know, desperate and naked and terrible words, and they're frank. And that notion or that experience, you know, being in synagogue when you're the cantor singing that alone, it's a plea to God, and it's a plea for recognition and a plea for forgiveness, and it's sung in that minor key twisting way. And for me, I hear echoes of that, the sound, and so in let's say the twisting lines of somebody like Ralph Stanley. But there's also that echo. There's a kind of existential and theological echo there too. Right, a man standing before God, asking questions or asking for mercy or saying, here I am, what do you make of me? And that is something that comes right out of my own Jewish tradition, but that is there in a different way, of course, but also a recognizable way in this primitive Baptist tradition, in a Calvinistic tradition, in a Reformed tradition. So there are these lines of connection. I would just say that I'm always hesitant to draw them to say that they're ironclad. For me, it's more imaginative or emotional. It doesn't mean they're less real, but they might be a little bit more personal than they are historical.
Thank you, Aaron, in Indianapolis, Indiana. Keep spreading the word about iron sharpens iron where you live. And we have Murray in Kinross, Scotland, who says, are hymns like the ones you've played given out spontaneously in worship, or are they selected beforehand? Also, some of the primitive Baptist music you have played reminds me of the way Gaelic Scots sing metrical hymns. Is there a known link between the two?
Okay, let's start with the last one. Yeah, there is some kind of a link. In the sort of the migration of Scots-Irish into the American backcountry, those kinds of singing traditions came with them. And many of those people, their ancestors would become primitive Baptists, and they bring those singing traditions into primitive Baptist worship. And so there's a connection there.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarity between bluegrass music and Scotch and Irish music. And there's a lot of like cultural connections, because a lot of the immigrants from Scotland and Northern Ireland, especially the Ulster Scots, did immigrate to the southern part of the United States.
Absolutely. And there's some singing that always comes to mind. There's recordings that I've heard, Gaelic psalm singing on some islands off the coast of Scotland, or so they're in the Hebrides, and that their way of singing is the Ralph Stanley way, and it's what musicologists call the old way of singing, that way of where there's a lot of ornamentation and what I keep calling twisting or grace notes, and sometimes solo, but oftentimes congregational. It's a type of singing that many trained choir masters will complain about as grumbling and squeaking, but it's a kind of singing that is beautiful and defiant in its own way. And what was the first part of that question? I can't remember. Are the hymns given out spontaneously? Yes, the answer is yes. So it's not to say that people don't have favorites, and then they call for their favorites. That happens. But, yes, yeah, someone will call for a song, or someone will start singing a song, and other people will join in.
And Murray from Kinross, Scotland, also says, so far as I know, the New Testament Greek word for psalmos carries with it the idea of striking with the fingers as on a musical instrument. I'm wondering what Dr. Guthman's thoughts are on that, please. And he also says, I was previously with an exclusive psalmody congregation of the Free Church of Scotland, who have now changed their position. The singing was led by a precentor. I also met with a Gospel Standard Baptist congregation who sung unaccompanied. I gather they still do. They use the Gadsby's hymn book. But the first part of his question about the song, the actual word psalm, I've heard it actually means song sung to a harp, but if you could comment on that.
Well, I don't, you know, this is, I've heard different, you know, translations. This is sort of in some way, this is like beyond my expertise in terms of what the Greek means. Absolutely, it seems to me that, you know, there's plenty of evidence that in ancient Jewish worship, people were using you know, those songs were, the psalms were sung, somebody's playing a lute or a lyre, they played on something called a kinnor, like a sort of like a violin, there's drumming was involved, things like that. I guess for me, what always interests me as the as a historian is just figuring out what people do in their own time and space. So if people calling themselves primitive Baptists are singing a cappella in 1835, I just want to know how that works for them and what that means to them at that moment in time. I'm not interested so much in figuring out whether they're right or wrong, really, or what they, you know, if they've got the meaning, if they've got the meaning of psalm correct. I just want to know why they, why do you sing like that? What does that mean to you? And so that's my question, will always kind of, for better and for worse, because there are certain blindnesses in that, in this way of thinking, but like that, you know, go back to that, that kind of, what does it mean to the person, to the religious person in his or her moment?
Well, thank you, Murray in Kinross, Scotland. Please keep spreading the word about Iron Sharpens Iron in the UK, and keep listening and participating with your questions. Linda in Hilltop Lakes, Texas, asked several questions, but we already covered most of what she asked. But she does ask something that I didn't ask you, because I don't know anything about music at all other than appreciating listening to it. I'm not a musician nor a composer or anything like that. But she asks, what percentage of the hymns of the Primitive Baptists are in a minor key or in a major key?
Oh boy. I don't know. I would say, here's what I would say. I don't know the numbers. Let me guess. I will say, in my experience, it's about even. But I do know that in some of the work of early folklore, so we're talking early 20th century people, you know, people just head out into the hills to collect songs. They would say that minor keys would be the sort of more prevalent sound that they heard. In my own personal experience, it's about, I'd say it's half and half, maybe. Maybe I would say something like that, but I don't know the numbers. And this is what I would say to the listener: there's an amazing book written just about Primitive Baptist hymnody, and it's called "The Sound of the Dove" by Beverly Bush Patterson. And if anybody knows, it's Beverly Patterson. And I would guess her book has something to say about numbers and ratios. She's an amazing writer and amazing scholar, and it's a great book.
Well, and Linda has one more question that you didn't cover. She says, what spiritual father, quote-unquote, brought them to this point? I'm assuming she's talking about a figure from history that perhaps was a part of the founding of the Primitive Baptists. She says, as my McAllen pastor says, dance with those who brung you. So if you could answer that to the best of your ability, if you even know.
I don't know. Okay, well, I don't know what I would say to that. I'm not really sure what Linda means by spiritual father.
I think it just means like a founder of the group, or perhaps somebody that moved them into a cappella worship or what have you.
Oh, that is, but I think that that's something that's, the a cappella practice is just sort of organic and congregational, and there is no one person early on that you could have sort of ascribed.
Yeah, in fact, from what I've already said earlier in the program, from my reading of John Price's book, Old Light on New Worship, it was those using instruments that were the innovators, because the majority of Protestantism was a cappella until the 19th century.
Absolutely. I think I would just say that what you find at the roots of this old way of singing, And then also at the roots of the primitive Baptist movement is a sense, yes, of a kind of questioning loneliness and uncertainty over one's own fate. Am I saved or am I damned? What has God decided? But you also hear defiance. And that's the defiance in the early primitive Baptist movement of saying, you know, we don't, no more money raising in our churches. Or a defiance of certain revivalistic tactics that primitives sensed were manipulative. And they stood against what so many of their brothers and sisters in were going towards. And then in the singing, this way of singing is something that was that song masters tried to stamp out by the early 18th century in ways they were trying to teach their congregation to sing by note, to sing by part, to sing in harmony, and they were constantly complaining that the people in the pews were grumbling and squeaking and seeming to mix up their words and were reading and also singing at the same time. It was all to them a confused noise, all this complaining. People were singing in a whining way. It was untunable, so on and so forth. And what was happening was Protestants, just regular old people in the pews, were saying, no, we're going to sing this way. This is our way of singing. And in a lot of ways, what you hear in the sound of primitive Baptist singing, and this is the sound of, it's a sound of a dissenting Protestant, and it's a sound that goes beyond just whatever the texts are in the hymn. But the sound would be something, the meaning is something like, I am a dissenter, I am poor, I am of the people, I oppose highborn ways, but I respect my elders, I respect the past. I am here, present, I'm receptive to the indwelling Spirit of God, and my singing is an emblem of all of this. I cannot be moved. And that's just my summation, you know, of what we're kind of hearing when somebody unfurls these notes.
Well, we have to go to our final break now, and we do have a few more listeners still waiting to have their questions asked and answered, including one from Slovenia, who has a couple of questions for you, Dr. Guthman. And if you'd like to join them with questions of your own, our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com. This is your final opportunity. We're going to have about 25 minutes left when we return from the break. So if you intend to send in a question, please do so now. At chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside of the USA. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Dr. Joshua Guthman and our discussion on the Primitive Baptists and their music. So please don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new Topical Reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Tired of box store Christianity? Of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times. 631-929-3512. Or check out their website, at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Iron Sharpens Iron Radio is sponsored by Harvey Cedars, a year-round Bible conference and retreat center nestled on the Jersey Shore. Harvey Cedars offers a wide range of accommodations to suit groups up to 400. For generations, Christians have enjoyed gathering and growing at Harvey Cedars. Each year, thousands of high school and college students come and learn more about God's Word. An additional 9,000 come annually to Harvey Cedars as families, couples, singles, men, women, pastors, seniors, and missionaries. 90 miles from New York City, 70 miles from Philly, and 95 miles from Wilmington, and easily accessible, scores of notable Christian groups frequently plan conferences at Harvey Cedars, like the Navigators, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, Campus Crusade, and the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. Find Harvey Cedars on Facebook or at hcbible.org, hcbible.org. Call 609-494-5689, 609-494-5689. Harvey Cedars, where Christ finds people and changes lives.
Are you a Christian looking to align your faith and finances? Then you'll want to check out Thrivent Financial. We're not your typical financial services provider. We're a not-for-profit Fortune 500 organization that helps our nearly 2.4 million members be wise with money. We provide guidance that reflects your values so you can protect what matters most. We help members live generously and strengthen the communities where they live, work, and worship. Learn more about the Thrivent story by contacting me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Blending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen. If you just tuned us in, our guest today for the full 2 hours has been Dr. Joshua Guthman, Associate Professor of History at Berea College in Berea, Kentucky. We have been discussing his book, Strangers Below, Primitive Baptists and American Culture, and our theme has been how a Jewish history professor from L.A. was captivated by the a cappella worship of primitive Baptists. If you'd like to join us on the air, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Before I go on to some of our listener questions, I want to remind you that tomorrow, that's Saturday, the 26th of November, it is the debut broadcast of a visit to the pastor's study hosted by my dear friend for nearly 30 years, Pastor Bill Shishko of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church of Franklin Square, Long Island, New York. And Pastor Bill is going to, starting tomorrow, He's going to be hosting this weekly live call-in show, a visit to the pastor's study, as I mentioned earlier. And you can call into that program with your own questions about nearly anything involving the Christian faith. You can call in also about personal questions that you would like to have pastoral counsel over or advice, as well as theological discussions. But whatever the issues are, you can listen live streaming anywhere on the planet Earth at WLIE540AM.com. That's WLIE, which stands for Long Island Expressway, not lying. WLIE540AM.com is the website. If you live in the New York tri-state area, you can hear the program live on the dial, on the radio dial at 540 AM. In New York, most places in New Jersey, most areas of Connecticut, and even in your car, in some areas in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, you can hear the program. But if you can't tune it in on the dial, go to WLIE 540 AM every Saturday from 12 noon to 1:30 PM Eastern Time. That's every Saturday, 12 noon to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Pastor Bill Shishko, host of A Visit to the Pastor's Study. And please let Pastor Bill know that you heard about his program on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. I would appreciate that very much, because he's not only a friend, but he's a client of mine. And I would like to know, I would like him to know that I am spreading the word about his program. We have Joe in Slovenia, which is the native land of our new First Lady, Melania Trump. Joe says, I love the music you're playing. It sounds to me that it may have some influences from the Negro spiritual tradition and style. Please ask Dr. Guthman if there are any connections between the two. Thanks for bringing us such a wide range of issues to wrestle with. Grace and peace. That's a very interesting question, Dr. Guthman, because out of all the white Southern music, this music does sound most like it has a connection with Negro spirituals. For instance, as you know, the vast majority of country Western music does not sound anything like that. There's very little black influence in country Western music or even country gospel music. You do have Charlie Pride and Darius Rucker, who have broken the mold on that, but the bluegrass music and this primitive Baptist music seems to have much more of an affinity with Negro spirituals, to me anyway, if you could comment.
I think Joe is absolutely right, and I'm really, really happy about this question, because it's important to note the black influence on this type of singing, because what's easy to trace, and it's correct to trace, is the stuff that we've been talking about, which is the sort of singing sound tradition that goes back into dissenting Protestant churches in England, or that you can trace to Scotland. So that's all there, and that's correct. But there's always something else going on with American Christianity, and you can't talk about American Christianity, you can't talk about primitive Baptist and primitive Baptist singing without wrestling with its African-American component. So I think Joe's on to something. It's harder to what you hear is there's a style of singing in black churches called surge singing, or a kind of moaning singing, and it's very, very similar to some of this sort of congregational lined out hymnody that you hear in old way primitive Baptist style singing. There are deep, deep affinities, even though if you listen to them side by side, you'd hear, let's say, a lot more nasality in white primitive Baptist churches, and a lot more of a kind of you just hear much more of a kind of I don't know how I'd put it, just that kind of black congregational there's a little bit more of a swing to it, even though it's not swinging and it's not syncopated. But there are serious connections. And there's a song on my website you can go to strangersbelow.com or strangersbelow.net, and there's a section on music and music from the book. And one of the last songs, perhaps the last song on there, is a song from a black Peruna Baptist church in Alabama. And if you listen to that music, you're going to hear connections to what we've heard before, but you also hear something that is straight out of the black church.
Yes, and by the way, just as a caveat to something I said earlier about country western music, there may be some that would argue that there, in its root, there is a lot of black influence in what later became country western music. I'm just talking about to my my 20th century ears. I don't.
You're right, Chris.
Yeah. So it does. It seems like a completely different sound than what you are. What you're commonly hearing from black artists throughout the centuries. So, Joe from Slovenia has one more question. My wife and I served as missionaries for almost 6 years in Russian Central Siberia. The music of these primitive Baptists that you're playing sounds very similar to the singing we did with the Russian Baptists. Please ask Dr. Guthman if he knows of any connections between Russian Baptist and Primitive Baptist in the United States of America.
No, none at all. I don't know anything, and I want to know more. Can Joe write to me and tell me? I am in deadly in earnest.
Well, I will tell Joe to what is your email address?
Just hit me up at the best way to go is just to go to my website. So go to strangersbelow.net, and you'll go to the About page and email me there. Or you can simply Google me, and you will find my Berea College homepage, and there'll be an email link there.
In fact, I could even, as well, I can off the air, or later on, I could email you Joe's question, so you could...
That's great. That would be great, too. I'm happy to give my email address out on the air. It's just, you never know, these things kind of get lost in translation. So it's my last name, Guthman, Guthman J. So then my first initial, guthmanj@berea.edu. Berea is spelled B-E-R-E-A.
Well, there you go, Joe in Slovenia. Shoot an email to Dr. Guthman because he wants to hear more from you about the Russian Baptists that you have experienced. Thank you so much Thank you so much for contributing to today's program. I'm going to play at least one more song, and then we'll go back to some more questions. But I, as I've been saying, I love the singing of the Cades Cove Primitive Baptist Church. And as I keep repeating, I am not giving my theological endorsement to the Primitive Baptists, and I'm not also disparaging them as a whole because they are not a monolith. I have serious objections to some of the things that would be common among many of them, such as hyper-Calvinistic tendencies, rejecting the use of means to bring the lost to salvation, such as evangelism and preaching and teaching and passing out of tracts and on and on. But I cannot help but to admit that I love much of their music, which is one of the reasons why we're conducting this interview today, is that I have a new friend here who is not even a Christian, who is a Jewish individual who also shares this love of this music, and I find it very fascinating that he has written a book about it, and that's why I invited him on this program. I have found this interview quite fascinating, and it's obvious that many of you have as well in the listening audience. But here is a song... Another song from the Cades Cove Primitive Baptist Church that I hope that you will enjoy.
Oh,
Well, that was a song that was very commonly heard to most of us in evangelical churches, the Old Rugged Cross, so that's nothing unusual, but that was done Primitive Baptist style, as you heard. And one of the things that I wanted to know, out of curiosity, since, as you know, Dr. Guthman, I am a strong conservative, evangelical, Calvinistic, Bible-believing Christian, I was wondering if any of these things that drew you into a study, a deeper study of the Primitive Baptists and their music, actually got you to more seriously consider and investigate the claims of Jesus Christ as being the fulfillment of Old Covenant or the prophecies of the Hebrew Scriptures?
I think the answer is no. It's not... I don't know how... It would be... How can I put this? I always feel that by studying Christians, learning about Christians, but really learning from Christians, I get closer to Christians, and that's deeply important to me. And that's why I love opportunities like this radio program so much. It's so valuable to me. But theologically, no, I can't go there. It's not my tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that with like the utmost respect. It's just not my tradition.
Well, I respect and appreciate your response because obviously, as you know, in this day and age of political correctness, people would think that even my asking that question would be some kind of a hateful kind of a thing or a bigoted thing.
Come on. Well, a lot of people got to get over it. I mean, why wouldn't you ask? I mean, that's what you ought to ask. There is ultimately an impasse there, but it's not, you know, I don't know how else to put it. My students ask me, you know, similar questions, and, you know, they'll wonder, you know, well, what's going on with you? And I say, well, you know, you can't spend as much time studying something like this without having a kind of deep reverence for it. That's undeniable. But I also have a deep reverence for my own tradition where I come from. And that just, you know, that's got me held real close, real held fast. So it just, I can't leave it.
Well, the thing that's kind of ironic is that 2,000 years ago, apart from the obviously clear teaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ and of the belief that he is not only the Messiah, but God in flesh and so on, there was a lot of cultural commonality because the original Christians were, with very few exceptions, all Jewish. So
yeah, of course. Yeah. Yep.
Well,
there's a writer named Lorne Winter who, you know, calls it's just Christians and Jews are branches on the same olive tree. And that's how I like to think of it.
And going back to a commonality I have with the Primitive Baptists, in spite of my serious differences with them theologically, I do believe that it is God ultimately that even opens someone's eyes to believe in Christ as being Messiah, as trusting in his finished work on the cross. And so ultimately, that is not in anyone's hands in an earthly sense. Those are the things that are paramount to what is known as Calvinism or Reformed theology. So I just honestly will say that I am praying to that end. But I cannot manipulate anyone coerce or use clever wording or so on to convince anyone of these truths. This is something that ultimately someone has to be born from above. This is, as the scriptures themselves say, that we can, as humans, can only plant seeds and water them, and God gives the increase. So that's just in regard to what I would have in common with the primitive Baptists, is that the human beings are not the arbiters of anyone's faith. They are not the ones that turn the light switch on. And before we go, since we only have 4 minutes left, I really want you to leave our audience with what you most want etched in their hearts and minds before the program's over.
We say that last bit again. Sorry, Chris.
I want you to summarize what you most want our listeners to leave the program with, and what you most want etched in their hearts and minds.
Oh, well, first, I just want to say how grateful I am, again, to be a guest on Iron Sharpens Iron. These types of conversations are so valuable to me. I'm learning all the way through, even though I'm ostensibly the expert here, but I'm learning by being asked all these questions and getting a chance to think again about some things that I've thought a lot about, and then also getting a chance to sort of think again about some stuff that I haven't thought about, or to even things I've ever really, I don't know anything about, like those Russian Baptists. For me, it's important that listeners and readers come away with a new or deeper understanding of who primitive Baptists are and were, and their place in American religious history, and that what you find by listening to their music and listening to their words is just a more complex picture of American Christianity, an American Christianity that's more fragmented than some people would have you believe, that's more diverse than some people would have you believe. And they're also representatives of a Calvinistic tradition. And you're familiar with this, of course, right? That sometimes the people outside of that tradition seem to think has faded away, or that vanished with the Puritans. But this is not true. And that Calvinistic way of being in the world is deeply important, and the primitives are one of the groups of people that have carried that along. That's what I'd like people to know.
And by the way, I found it fascinating when I was investigating Berea College that one of the founding members or most influential people from history that led to the founding of the college was Cassius Clay, who was an abolitionist. And now I know where who most of our listeners would know as Muhammad Ali, who passed away about 6 months ago. Now I know where she most likely got that name, because Cassius Clay, later Muhammad Ali, was born and raised in Kentucky.
That's right. That's right. This college has got a... Yeah, interesting connections. and a fascinating story.
Yes. Well, I want to remind our listeners that you can learn more about the book Strangers Below, Primitive Baptists in American Culture, and more about our guest today, Dr. Joshua Guthman, by going to his website, joshuaguthman.com. That's Joshua Guthman, GUTHMAN.com. And you can learn more about him and the book Strangers Below. In fact, I also want to thank the University of North Carolina Press for giving us those free copies that we shared with listeners who wrote questions. That's uncpress.unc.edu. UNC for University of North Carolina Press, .unc.edu. Thank you so much for providing those copies. And I want all of you to have a wonderful weekend. I hope you are of a blessed weekend and a safe weekend and a precious Lord's Day. And don't forget to tune in to Visit to the Pastor's Study tomorrow on WLIE540AM.com with Pastor Bill Shishko from 12 noon to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And I want you all to always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far greater Savior than you are a sinner. We look forward to hearing from you and your questions next week for our guests on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. God bless.